Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 289. I'm Steve Raker, your host from the Comic Book Bunker, and this is the podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. But we've got a Facebook page, and we're on Twitter at Marvel Noise. You can listen to us on our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, and you can find new and old segments, episodes, archives on marvelnoise.com. Listener contributions are always welcome if you would like to make some noise yourself. I'll have the guys on in a few minutes to cover Thunderbolts issues 122 to 127, where things get all Secret Invasion-y and Skrull-y after Warren Ellis redirected the title and made it a lot darker. But first, I've got a few recent reads to share with you. For instance, Old Man Logan issues 14 and 15 were the two-part Monster War arc, written by Jeff Lemire with art by Philippe Andrade and colors by Jordi Belair. Jubilee goes missing. She's got a baby now, and she leaves the baby behind, so something's wrong here. Old Man Logan tracks her to Romania, and remember, Jubilee is a vampire now, and Old Man Logan, I can't help but call him Old Man Logan every time. Old Man Logan encounters S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Monster Squad. Remember those guys? The Howling Commandos. It's Man-Thing, Hit-Monkey, Werewolf by Night, Manphibian, amongst others. And they're tracking their vampire teammate, who also went missing. Okay, so it's Dracula who's behind it all. There's some good battles, action scenes, story beats. The dialogue is sharp. And Orgo, the old Kirby Lee Kirby monster, makes an awesome appearance as a deus ex machina. You've got to read this one. This is a good one. Wait for it to be on Marvel Digital, the Marvel Unlimited digital service, and check this one out. Now, back in the day, back in my day, when I was, a 12-year-old, back in the summer of 1982, I believe, the Contest of Champions 3-issue limited series came out. And it was the first Marvel limited series because, hey, nothing at Marvel is mini, right? If they're going to do one of these series like this, they're not going to call it mini. That's not Marvel lingo. But limited fits right in with that, you know, comic collector mindset lingo. So limited series at Marvel, mini series is everywhere else. But the 3-issue Contest of Champions was written by Mark Gruenwald with art by John Romita Jr. and inks by Bob Layton, kind of the Iron Man art team. And we had the Elder of the Universe, the Grandmaster, doing a wager with Death, playing a game, and they each picked heroes to be on their team. And the stakes were that the Grandmaster wanted to return his brother, the Collector, to life. He was killed by Korvac in the big Korvac saga, Avenger saga, around 175, I want to say. Well, the two teams, amongst them, they introduced all these, or at least collected all these different international heroes to show that there are Marvel heroes all over the world that would have been drawn from, not just the heroes from New York, like when they would have the Secret Wars a few years later. But they also took the time to introduce new characters like Shamrock, the Peregrine, the Collective Man, who we've seen even when we've covered our Thunderbolts segments in the past. So, like, I'm a 12-year-old, and I'm reading along, you know, and heroes from each side are tasked to battle each other in an effort to collect pieces of this golden, like, collecting, like, golden Trivial Pursuit-like wedges that can be formed together at the end. And, you know, I'm reading along and I'm keeping track of kind of who's up one or what team could be the possible victor here. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Grandmaster announces victory and the plot moves ahead. And I'm like, wait, no. It was a tie. It's a tie. If you looked at the heroes who collected the pieces, it ends up being a dead even tie. So editorial and writing, they goofed. They acted like the Grandmaster won, but it didn't matter for the Grandmaster because Death, you know, you can't really pull one over on Death. He's got his own monkey's paw type hidden consequence there because, sure, he's going to bring the Collector back to life, but a soul has to replace him, and the Grandmaster, being a sport and playing the game through to the end, gives himself up, and he dies, goes into Death's realm, and the Collector is born again. But years later, the Collector, in an Avengers annual, would win back the Grandmaster's life from Death by playing for the stakes of making the Elders of the Universe all immortal. So he, like, banished all of the Elders from Death's realm. Then there was a Contest of Champions 2, like, in 1999, that was a sequel, and really in name only, completely unrelated. It was a 5-issue Chris Claremont thing. It's an alien brood story and nanites and yada, yada, yada. But in 2014, just a few years ago, we had the introduction of Kabam's multi-platform mobile device game, Contest of Champions. It's on iOS and Facebook, probably, and Android devices as well. So that led to, you know, the market wanting, well, make that marketing wanting, a new Contest of Champions series. And behold, in 2015, at the end of Secret Wars, we got the, kind of using the remnants of Doom's Battle World, we have the Grandmaster and the Collector having a new Contest of Champions and a new Contest of Champions series, and they would tie in lingo from the video game, like using the powerful ISO objects that pop up in a bunch of the Marvel mobile games. So this new Contest of Champions series would run 10 issues. It's written by Al Ewing, with art by Paco Medina for the first 6 issues, and Roald Marcelius for the last 4 issues. And it's, like I said, it's the Collector versus the Grandmaster, but they each use a proxy, almost like a team manager, to collect talent and direct the talent for them. And the Collector has the Maestro, the Hulk, the future imperfect Hulk, who was brought back into prominence again during the Secret Wars event. The Collector uses the Maestro, and the Grandmaster uses the Punisher 2099 as his captain or lieutenant or whatever. Of course, the Maestro and the Punisher 2099, they team up and take their treachery to the Collector and the Grandmaster themselves and overthrow them and take the ISO and, become a threat for the second half of the series on their own, which I preferred, the back nine, so to speak. Amongst the heroes that are involved is an alternate Earth Elektra, who has a Bullseye moniker, and Stick from the old Daredevil comics, and Venom, and the Sentry, and Gamora. There's a Joe Fixit Hulk. But also Ares and Night Thrasher are both permanently brought back from the dead. And that would last after the end of this series. So Night Thrasher's back, and Ares is back. And Night Thrasher, they make him a total badass, too. Like, the way he strategizes, and first they're all laughing, like, what is this guy on the skateboard gonna do? And he turns into a real player. So after the Maestro takes all the ISO and takes over, not only do we have the remnants of these two teams trying to deal with those ramifications, but also the Ultimates make the scene to take him down. Because, hey, this is an Al Ewing written book, after all, as is the Ultimates. There's even a strong Thunderbolts angle on the last 6 issues, too. Again, worth a free read on Marvel Unlimited digital service. I should also mention that James Robinson's post-Secret Wars Squadron Supreme book that had me worried for a while, as I reported, I didn't like the death of Namor, obviously, one of Marvel's first heroes, the first mutant, all that. And Hickman's Hyperion, his character, kind of turning sour. And that whole bit with Nighthawk being able to catch up on, like, 30 years of Marvel continuity and how to live and totally take advantage of all of the aspects of the Marvel Universe in just a matter of months when he's a fish out of water after the Secret Wars left a funny taste in my mouth. But I just am here to report that it all ended very satisfactorily in the issues leading up to the last issue, which was issue 15. Namor's back. Hyperion starts acting more in character with who he was based on his experiences from the Hickman run. And Hyperion and Nighthawk break up. And Robinson leaves his mark on Jim Hammond, the original Human Torch, yet again. Good book, though. Turned out all right. Lastly, I've got a from the summer 2016 through winter 2017 here, a Digital Infinite Comics roundup. You ready? Basically, I've developed a new rule of thumb for perusing Marvel Digital Infinite Comics. Basically, if it's got artist Riley Brown involved, it's going to be good. For instance, Deadpool Too Soon was written by Joshua Corin with layouts by Riley Brown and art by Todd Knock. Deadpool thinks he thinks he's a real joker. He thinks it'd be funny to get the Punisher, Ant-Man, Groot, Squirrel Girl, Howard the Duck, Rocket Raccoon, Forbushman, and Spider-Ham, with he and his wife Shikla, the demon sorceress, for the ultimate holiday card group photo. But the lights go out, and when the lights come back on, Forbushman is dead. So it's, who killed Forbushman? And on the way in investigating this, others start dying in the group too. It's safe to say the outcome of this story has major implications on Deadpool and Shikla's relationship. Also, Slapstick Infinite Comic. 4 issues are in so far. Written by Riley Brown and Fred Van Lente, with layouts by Riley Brown and art by Diego Olertugi. Has Spider-Man appearing in the first issue and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the second. And Slapstick never really cared for the character. These issues, very entertaining. I gotta admit it. Spider-Man and he go up against Quasimodo, the gray one with the monocle. And his computer speak is really funny, too. And he sticks around. Slapstick basically like takes him to hang out in his room and do odd jobs for him. So he's around in the second subsequent issue, too. But, you know, it almost becomes a Looney Tune type of a thing with Slapstick having to face off against, like, a Casey at the Bat, crazy big built guy, and it's fun. Fun comic books, but it is a little gruesome at times. Then there's the Daredevil Punisher, Seventh Circle. There were 8 chapters of this, written by Charles Soule, with masked layouts and Zyman Kudransky art. This one was alright. Definitely on the better than average. Daredevil's trying to get a fugitive to his court appearance across country or wherever, trying to get him to an airport so he can get a fair trial. But the Punisher is trying to off the guy. And the Crimson and the Crimson Dynamo is involved. I don't think of that character in a Daredevil story, but that other Infinite comic a couple of years ago where the Super Daptoid had to, face off with Daredevil, I thought ended up being really entertaining too. On the below average end of the spectrum, we've got the Guardians of the Galaxy Awesome Mix. There's 9 issues of this so far. It's an all-ages, target audience, young adult. So read them with your kids if you have them, but otherwise, skip them. There's Doctor Strange, Punisher, Magic Bullets. That, I think, is 6 or 7 issues so far that have been out. This is more kids' fare. Teen or older readers, beware. And then, lastly, although starting off pretty promising, the second half of the monthly A Year of Marvels Infinite Comic project was pretty unremarkable, except for the October offering, which was a Kate Bishop Hawkeye tale written by Jeremy Whitley with Jeffo layouts and Laura Braga art and Rachel Rosenberg colors. Kate Bishop has to escort her new, in air quotes, girlfriends through like a house of horrors. Straightforward and fun, dealing with traps and situations and danger and having to get like to the next room. Very linear storytelling and fun with the tapping, the layers, etc. Oh, plus the Son of Satan, Damian Hellstrom, makes an appearance, so that's always fun. All right, those are the books I've been reading. Let's get to some Thunderbolts.
That time for Marvel Noise Most Wanted Justice Like Lightning Thunderbolts coverage. We're back. We've kept to our rigorous schedule of Power Man, Thunderbolts, Power Man, Thunderbolts. I can't wait till Power Man is in Thunderbolts. Then everyone will be confused and no one will know what's going on.
That's going to be a lot of Power Man.
This is the Thunderbolt segment. I can't imagine anyone's unfamiliar with it, but if you are, if this is your very first Marvel Noise, the Thunderbolts podcast is where a group of us have started with the first issue or with the first appearance in Hulk. You'll have to go back and check which one we started with. And have covered the series from now up until Secret Invasion time, and we're ongoing. We've covered far too many of the crossover and miscellanea ephemera, such as the Thunderbolts novel, which I read and reported on and sits in Kevin's beaver dam up north, although I don't think he's read it, actually. And the group of us is Super Steve from the bunker.
Hello.
He's the one that makes sure we're on schedule and the trains run on time. He is a Thunderbolts on and offer. There is the original Thunderbolts fan, WWX Kev up in Canada.
Good day.
And he's the genesis of this idea. And then I was the guy that jumped on kind of around coming up soon to where we're crossing from. I mean, I'd read a few issues of these kind of cross tie-ins and things like that, but I really got involved in the Jeff Parker days, which we may end up getting to. But as is... Oh, go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, this whole thing started, you know, I have roped you guys into doing segments with me on the show on various, covered various old comics and things and topics. And then this was a side project that you guys started doing yourselves and took a little bit of the pressure off me on some episodes. But then it started, you guys were getting close into the Hawkeye stuff that I was like, oh, I want to be there for the Hawkeye stuff. So I had to jump on the bandwagon with you guys. And then it was then, you know, 100 started becoming a reasonable goal. And then it's like, I want to get to 100 because I only had read that the once. And it was time to dig that out and see what the heck happened with that big issue, because I had forgotten some of it. And we hit that, and then it's like, we could probably make it to the Ellis stuff. And now that's in the, you know, the rearview mirror. So upward and onward.
And upward and onward indeed. And as part of our tradition, super fan Kevin usually sets the table, tells us who our Thunderbolts are, tells us where we are in the Marvel Universe. Kevin, who are our Thunderbolts and what's going on?
Our Thunderbolts are Songbird, Melissa. She makes constructs out of sound. She's the field leader. Moonstone, Carla. She does blasting and flying and sometimes phasing. A radioactive man. Radioactive man. Swordsman, Andreas. He's a strucker. He's also a swordsman. Bullseye, Lester. He's an assassin. He never misses. We also have Penance, Robbie, Speedball. He doesn't make so many speedballs nowadays. Venom, Matt Gargan. He's a symbiote. Or, he's not. He has a symbiote. I guess it would be more accurate. Sometimes it's hard to tell. It wants to eat your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Well, we're just coming off of where the Thunderbolts Mountain was put in complete turmoil by the infiltration of those telepaths who kind of made everybody's motives kind of be amplified so that everyone was really not hiding the things that they were hiding and acting full in character. I mean, Norman Osborn, who's leading this ragtag team and kind of playing the political angle and trying to get some political gravitas out of the whole deal, he threw on the Goblin mask and was flying around killing people. And Venom was biting guards' heads off, and everyone was stabbing each other in the back, sometimes literally and certainly figuratively. And after all of it, we have a Penance who is a little more with it now. He's not such the in-shock character that he was and not quite as pitiful. He seems a little bit more measured, and he's had a good therapy session with Doc Samson, and now he is decided to stick around to keep his eye on the rest of the Thunderbolts and kind of do his, you know, kind of what they're all trying to do is redeem themselves in one way or another, right? Or at least the original team. But things are funny here. I mean, we've got the whole thing where Songbird sent video of Norman riding around on the Goblin glider out with Samson. And that's her ace in the hole. And the leverage that she got by having that threat of, you know, delivering that to the authorities and ruining this whole construct of public relations image that Norman's created for himself is she wants to be the team leader. So she's biting away and trying to get a little more power to try to make the Thunderbolts a little bit more what the mission she's always wanted it to be. But we've got this Norman and Carla duo who are really the baddies here, and they're sitting behind the scenes trying to see how to react to this now and what their next move is going to be.
And we're just kicking off the Secret Invasion event. Now, we've started with our coverage before the big event books, and now we're firmly into the era of your story is going to get sideswiped for a couple issues every year while they talk about whatever the big event is. We've seen some poor integration, like House of M, but we've also seen better attempts, such as Civil War. I also want to point out, I'm reading this on the Marvel Unlimited app. In the old days, I went out and bought all kinds of weird back issues and tie-ins and crossovers and all that, but I'm just as glad to just swipe on these things on the machine. Not that I didn't enjoy buying all that stuff, but it's good to... good use for your Marvel Unlimited time, kids.
What happened to that Andrew that was dedicated, that went out there and sought out those issues and bought them? Even the battle
the novelization.
Books.
He bought the novelization.
I don't know.
Most of those, I just went to my comic shop and ordered in a big bunch. Luckily, the value on some of these isn't so high. And those, well, they had originally, for those interested, the first few collections are in trade, maybe 3 or 4 volumes where they have some of the tie-ins, and it really worked great, although Kevin did have some disputes with the reading order versus Marvel's reading order, but we worked it out amicably, I would like to say.
And all of this stuff, the Ellis run on, is all in trades as well.
Yeah. I see for the first 4 issues here, we have regular, like, I guess you could say superhero, like regular superhero covers. And then once you get to like 126, 127, we're back to our dark and smoky and serious covers.
Yeah, these we're looking at issues 122 to 127. Is that right? And with the first 4 issues, the Secret Invasion issues, being written by Christos Gage with art by Fernando Blanco.
And I'm going to say, personally, the opening splash page did not win me over. But by the end, the artist had really, his style, I thought, I enjoyed it more by the end of this run than the first one. But the first page, I don't know, something about it just didn't click with me.
Oh, you know why it clicked with me?
Swarm.
Okay, you know me too well.
Ditto. But
I think it's the Super Friends Swarm. Because he's like, Zwarm, and if I recall correctly, that's how he was in the cartoon, not in the comics.
I remember Swarm from way back, like in the Champions comic, like in, I think it was 14 and 15 he was in, and, you know, he's a Nazi
beast.
Ex-Nazi who's, like, only a skeleton, and he's, like, he's held together just by a bunch of bees that he controls, and he's got a purple hood. But I remember there was a creepy... I can't remember if it was in Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man somewhere in the mid-30s issues or if it was those Champions issues. But there's one end panel where, like, there's the dead skull there and there's just a little bee crawling out of his eye. And, oh, man, I loved Swarm.
So comic booky. That's why I love it.
Well, this one, I thought Gage did a great job of resetting the table a little bit but keeping the very sharp patter between Norman and Carla in particular.
Yeah.
They're just going to snipe at each other. And I really enjoyed those sequences. But it quickly shows that the team is having trouble with Swarm. And it's a nice showcase of some of their different abilities, too. Like I said, I just thought it was a great... If you didn't know the Thunderbolts or these characters, you could be drop in, get their personality and their power set in the first 10 pages or whatever, which is not always easy.
And if you look at this whole four issues that Gage has written here as kind of one story, which it really is, this is one of those nice, like a cinematic opening, like a sequence in a Bond movie, you know, where they're off on a separate little adventure. It showcases all the cool stuff they can do. And then they're back for what the rest of the story is, or like a episode of The Simpsons where there's that opening segment that just has nothing to do with whatever the rest of the story is going to be. And the bulk of the episode is going to be, but it lets you know kind of how things work. And it gives the writer an opportunity to, again, kind of showcase stuff about each character.
Yeah, Gage also brings up some of the threads from his own one-shots that he did with the Thunderbolts. So it's good that there's a little bit of payoff to some of those things.
The solution to the swarm problem, though, is brutal, where they... Norman literally kicks Venom out of their... what do they call it? The Zeus? Their airship? Drops him in the middle of swarm. And, well, you know what Venom likes to do with bones. Bust him up and chew him up and crunch him up. And they show it all, man. He chops his head right off and he's still munching on it a few pages later.
I like how Carla's still not, like, in the field fighting. And then they have a moment. She has a moment with Norman there. Yeah, Songbird seems to think that we killed her mother. And then they both go, did you? Did you? They both look at each other, and then they just stop talking.
And I'm still not convinced that neither of the... You know what I mean? I still think one of them did.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah, probably something went down.
At least we know they didn't do it together.
Yeah.
And he conveys well that the team is kind of on the edge of falling apart. All these, everyone has their particular issue, no pun intended, and this leads to the current, one of the worst ones is the Swordsman. And his issue was Norman was claiming that they were going to provide a clone of his sister to him as a sort of carrot to get him to comply. But this issue after the Swarm battle finds Norman's been cut to the chase and his sister is already there.
Whoa, she's a Skrull, right?
Well, that's... I think we haven't gotten the Skrull flavor yet. But there is some question. We know from the one-shot that Kevin mentioned that he had let Zola go in exchange for setting up a clone. But everyone's a little bit skeptical, even though they know this from analyzing what could have happened. Because it's weird that they could have aged her up and given her all the memories. And Norman doesn't really want to let the Swordsman go. He only wants the Swordsman to fight until he dies, and then that's done. But he knows he has to handle it very carefully. And meanwhile, the twins are just weird. There's a bizarre sequence where he brushes her hair.
You know it's pretty bizarre, but not as bizarre as that? There's a Marvel Masterpieces ad in here. I guess the cards came back in 2008, 2009.
So I was in a game store the other day and saw the deck games are back and dice games for both Marvel and DC.
Wow.
And I was like, who is playing these dice? That was kind of fun. I don't know anyone that's playing it, but they were on the shelves.
Oh, I got hypnotized by another ad. They have a lot of comic-based ads in here, which is good, but... I don't know, it seems to be an awful lot of them. Usually Secret Invasion, like Guardians of the Galaxy or Inhumans, and one of them is... It looks pretty iconic, Medusa, where she's holding Black Bolt's costume, and her hair is just covering the entire page.
Yeah.
So the power players, Norman, Carla, and Moonstone, or Carla is Moonstone, and Songbird, are all meeting in Norman's office and bring the Swordsman there. He leaves his sister in his office. And they're going to have a discussion because he just wants to leave. And Norman doesn't want to get him to leave. And before it gets resolved,
we get a faboom, and Captain Marvel's back.
Whoa, you skipped the creepy moment.
Well, I mentioned where he's brushing her hair. That's pretty creepy.
No, the one where, since she died, and then he skinned her so he could still use the flesh-on-flesh thing. So now he skinned his arm so she can do the flesh-on-flesh thing. Which is weird.
That seems more like standard Strucker operating procedure, if you want my opinion.
Here, have my eye.
Exactly.
Wait, oh, it's got to be skin to skin. The eye doesn't count, Steve.
Captain Mar-Vell. We're talking about Mar-Vell here. Like, not Genus Vell, like Mar-Vell.
Like cancer can't stop him.
Well, that's what they were saying, right? Didn't he have a miniseries before this?
Where just a thought... one-shot. The Return, oh, okay. Right? Or maybe it was a miniseries. I don't know. No, it was a miniseries after, right? It was the one-shot, The Return.
Yeah, probably.
Jenkins wrote it and got a lot of heck for it. And then there was the miniseries that it was either drawn by McGinnis or just had covers by McGinnis.
Yeah. And then I guess he finds out he's a Skrull in that. Which,
but he's a Skrull who always thought he was Mar-Vell. Like,
but
isn't that
the whole conditioning where... I thought they went into this in Bendis' Avengers where there was that whole thing where, oh, you have to believe you're the guy. Of course, it's always an easy out, too.
That's their way of, there's two things I really didn't like about Secret Invasion, all right? The main idea of it, I really liked. The build-up to it, I really liked in New Avengers and stuff. I thought that was pretty cool how it was, the seeds were set. They had an opportunity to do some interesting things with some characters, bring some characters back and stuff, which they did. But this pathetic Mar-Vell return was a real kick in the face to the character. It was it was a real stain on the event, I thought. It was handled weird. The character was weird. The whole justification was lame. And the other thing I didn't like about was, I'll wait till we get to it, because we're going to get to it.
What I thought was interesting and isn't remarked upon at all is that Moonstone's back to phasing.
No, they remark upon this. Once we get to Diggle, she says something like, oh yeah, when I got beaten up earlier in the Ellis run, my phasing powers hadn't returned yet. And I was like, wait a second, what?
But they don't mention it here. She phases through when Captain Marvel shoots her.
Yeah, so once I saw that, I'm like, hey, someone remembers she has phasing powers again.
And she's going to use it several times in this story, too.
Yeah. But the first time, it was just weird that it was remarked. The other thing that always I didn't like in retrospect about the Secret Invasion thing was I didn't like how the Skrulls could mimic all the powers the same degree.
We'll get to that.
He effectively wipes out the Thunderbolts, who, at different times have different levels of competency. That's another slight thing that's always bothered me. At times, they're either ultra competent and can take on every superhero in the Marvel Universe, or some knockoff can take all six of them out without breathing hard.
See, this isn't the best Secret Invasion stuff. That's the thing. If you wanted the absolute best, you would go to something like Avengers Initiative, where they had a good guy Skrull working with everyone, but people didn't know he was a Skrull. And then 3D Man shows up.
I mean, I enjoyed that. I actually enjoyed this issue. Like I said, I think the pacing is quick. I like the choice to do it's one big page notwithstanding. He generally chooses, some of the artists to see, a lot of little panels, which, as you guys know, is my preferred way. And the next big splash where Venom's getting blown out has a series of insert panels.
He's a very good storyteller, and I think that's why I can forgive how inconsistent his faces are. Like, sometimes his faces are really good, and other times they're so wonky they look like they're done with a mouse on a laptop, But the storytelling is great. You get into the flow of it, and he tells the story.
But it ends with Norman, the only one he didn't completely trash, asking to talk to him. And he has a bottle and two glasses in his hand. And it's a fun... I've noticed they decided to make Norman a bit more fun than maybe he has traditionally been shown. I mean, he was always shown to be smart and crazy. But I like when they decide, you know what, he can also, you know, crack a joke and be kind of funny and not just completely nutso. Because yeah. In the old days, it seemed like Norman either had two, was the weird businessman who was not right, or the crazy goblin.
Well, I think this is more interesting, Norman, than what we get after, where it becomes kind of oppressive and bleak, Norman.
And that leads us right to the next issue, which picks up right where the last one left off, but sort of switching perspectives a little bit with Norman with his glass, except this time he's filled the second glass. So there's that, the difference between the two is the amount of time to fill a second glass.
Yes, time has passed. Later.
And he knows he can talk to this guy because Norman knows all about being crazy.
Ugh, not only is Captain Marvel crying, like tears coming out of little Skrull-Vell's eyes, but also in the next panel, like, drool is coming out of his mouth. He's so pathetic.
Well, at least he wasn't he was the fake one, so that's okay.
Yeah.
I like how he starts going into, after this Captain Marvel stuff is resolved, it's like he starts going on about, oh, how Oscorp tech is so much more superior to Stark tech. Because that was part of the storyline, too, of Secret Invasion. How, oh, our tech can work because I demanded that everything can't be Stark tech.
I liked that, how that was needed to be a part of Osborn for what comes next and the whole Dark Reign thing and him becoming Iron Man, basically, and taking over S.H.I.E.L.D. and Iron Patriot and all that business. But, you know, Osborn was a chemist. Osborn was a chemical group. He wasn't a, you know what I mean? This wasn't in his wheelhouse. The guy was a nut. And he was a you know, but whatever.
Well, I often wonder if the goblin formula also increased his intelligence, period, along with making him strong and unstable and all the other things.
You guys think he actually did work on this? I assumed he just beat someone to submission and they did all the stuff for him.
Like, well,
he likes sitting in his office glider. And talking to people.
I mean, that was some tech to get the glider going.
Oh, he probably got that from the fixer.
Or the tinkerer.
But this is also super competent Norman, where he's just got it all in hand and plans are plans on top of plans. And he gets the whole crew together and he's wearing this green jumpsuit. And he's going to take the team to D.C. to save everybody.
Because like
as you say,
gun?
He's got Osborn tech, which is not failing because the Stark tech is. Once I finished reading these issues, I actually jumped and did a quick scan of Secret Invasion, the main series.
Oh, no. You were in the Savage Land for 4 issues.
I didn't, like, read. I just, you know, where you're looking to refresh your recollection a little bit.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that it was terrible, but it just... I felt like they didn't do a good job of making that thing stand on its own. It certainly was nice because it fleshed out the Thunderbolts bits. But I was thinking if you just read that limited series, I think you might feel a little disjointed. I don't think they had it as a complete standalone.
No, that doesn't have to be the design, though, of an event necessarily. Although they have made it an effort to make it the design of most events since.
I just think that's smarter because at the end of the day, most people, if they want to revisit it, are just going to want to read that. I was just curious. I don't want to read 44 issues of the event, you know?
Well, that was supposed to just be an Avengers storyline anyway until marketing got a hold of it and wanted to make it into an event thing. And then they're like, all right, well, we'll make it its own standalone series when all the other heroes all kind of get together for the climax sort of thing. But it was, you know, it was an Avengers story.
Weren't the Skrulls cooler in the main series, though? Because I didn't find they did enough, cool Thunderbolts Skrulls in here. I guess we sort of saw some of that stuff, though, although it's not exactly the same, is when the Super Adaptoid started adapting their villainous personas instead of their heroic ones. Like, I wanted to see more, like, cool Skrull Thunderbolt stuff, but we don't really get that.
Well, they do end up fighting the Skrulls, and I like when they unleash Venom, who just starts eating Skrulls. The other thing I thought in the main series, I don't think it touches upon here, is the Skrulls really are upset about the first Skrull appearance where they're hypnotized into turning into cows. Oh. They cannot let that go.
No.
Well, it's brought up several times that apparently was the worst thing the Fantastic Four could have done. So
it wasn't that great of an idea, you know? I mean, you remember that annual, the Burn annual, where they go back to the town and the people have been drinking the milk from those cows and they're all, like, getting mutated and stuff?
The Skull Kill crew thing? Yeah, they've really come back to that issue, to that that one plot point more than anything else in those old books.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
Right up there with Ben Grimm wearing the Blackbeard beard and the pirate hat an issue later, you know? Those first six issues were so crazy.
But anyways, once Venom starts eating him, then, as Kevin said, we see the Super Skrull. Mm-hmm. But this is the Thunderbolt Super Skrull. And again, it's left a little bit vague that this is just some of them have, because you'd think otherwise they would all use superpowers. I mean, they always made a big point about either they use technology to cover it when they first started impersonating the Fantastic Four, or they had, Paybok and the Super Skrull. Like, they were special, not regular people.
Yeah, Kyler was the big, the Super Skrull. I mean, he was their most fiercest warrior. Now everyone's a Super Skrull. It's like the difference between Aliens and Alien. You know, those movies where it's like an alien, there's just one of them, and it's like adapting, and it's unstoppable, and it's all the humans can handle. And then in Aliens, it's like if you have six bullets in your gun, you can kill six aliens.
Mm-hmm. But I want to see a Venom Baron Zemo, like Moonstone, or some crazy thing.
But I guess I miss one important plot point, and that is when before they hit the battle, Norman takes Carla aside and says that they figure that pretty much his sister, the swordsman's sister, has to be a Skrull. So when she gets a chance, kill her, incapacitate him, kill her, and then show him the body and then use that rage to turn him against the Skrulls to make him, like, just mad with rage. So this thing starts as the beginning, this issue as the beginning of that, where she knocks out the swordsman when his back is turned.
And they're going to DC to basically fend off a full-scale invasion at this point. And that's why they're sending in Venom to just bite heads off, and even sending in Bullseye and just saying, hey, go wild, kill as many of them as you can, which he does, including his handlers, the guards that are with him.
But they find a way to trigger a meltdown within Radioactive Man, and then Penance is haunted by the people he killed. The Skrulls change their form to look like them, and then they also change to look like very different versions of Spider-Man.
That's probably the best one. And the black costume Spider-Man Skrulls are like, face it, Tagger, you're a joke. And Norman's like, no, not Spider-Man, Spider-Man.
So I thought that was, we're setting it up. It flows well into the next issue, is the second part where Norman just unloads his cable gun, big giant gun, into all the Skrulls. And then they reveal themselves to be Skrulls, obviously. It wasn't like he gunned down Spider-Man.
Yeah, and again, only 1 second has passed between the last issue and this one.
The other thing that's weird is that sometimes when they... like, I guess they must wear these outfits then and have the outfits made for them, because I thought they could shape change like Mystique, but I guess they can't change their clothes. Only their shape. Seems like one of those ones that is a weird plot point as well. But I like, so Norman is...
I like that there's a cathartic aspect to Norman killing the Spider-Man Skrulls too. Afterwards, he kind of pulls himself together from the kind of the berserker rage of shooting them all apart and being like, oh, all right, I've killed Spider-Man. I can kind of move on with my life here. And then steps on. He's like, this Spider-Man's a stain on my shoe. And then squishes one of the Skrull heads under his steel-toed boot.
Don't mess with the Norman. He's the no fun man. But he made it through his trap, but Penance is just going crazy because, you know, he's haunted by his guilt. And Venom is just attacking civilians. That's not good.
It looks creepy.
And but he just was playing possum because one of them reveals themselves to be a Skrull, and they'll be like, once we broadcast you eating all the people, they'll join us. And that's when you realize he was faking it. And he was just grossing people out and covering them with his little venom trails. And he wasn't eating them at all. So how about that? A happy ending.
Right.
But meantime, Moonstone is busy working in front of the Strucker twin. She's trying to get the Skrulls to make her a deal. She'll give up all this information to be a Quisling and run South America. And the Skrulls are like, that sounds pretty good, but what does your friend want? And that's when she realizes that she's not a Skrull. And she gets blasted. Because, you know, they showed earlier that the swordsman gave her a piece of his skin so she could also blast him at any times. But just as she's about to do in Moonstone, Bullseye shows up, and you know,
and does Andrea, and then tries to go for a twofer, because you know why not? Nothing, he can go crazy now. He can try to kill Moonstone as well.
But Moonstone phases through, and so the phase is back. Whoa. It was just a phase she was going through.
Yeah. I got a double page spread here of an ad where it says embrace change. And it has three kids here and they're all eating ice cream, but one of them's a Skrull. And Andrew, you're supposed to go to www.embracechange.org.
No, we learned that with the Daredevil game. I am not destroying my computer with weird URLs from the past.
I'm thinking that's probably not a Secret Invasion website anymore.
Yeah, it's probably some spam warning your computer is going to get disintegrated. So they grab the swordsman and his sister, because, you know, why not? That's going to come in handy.
You know what I think is amazing? Moonstone's costume gets shredded, and then the artist has to keep on, like, getting it right through the rest of the issue because it never gets fixed.
Funny.
Like, can't she just, like, summon up new clothing?
Yeah, that's how she made it in the first place. But this writer and this artist aren't the usuals on this book, so.
Well, they also have it strategically shredded in all but, you know, very key places.
Honestly, it's the best this costume has looked. I don't care for it.
It's better than like, she's had a lot of costumes, and it's better than some, but not the best.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, Songbird is getting pounded by, well, we can't call him the Super Skrull or Pate. What do we call in these? The Thunderbolt Skrull.
The Atlas Skrull?
Skrull, Atlas Skrull. So, meanwhile, Carla has to take Dr. Chen up in the atmosphere, because if he's going to blow up, they need him to blow up far and away, and she's the only one that can also survive in space. So she gets up there, and he blows it apart, and I think he blows even more of her costume apart. But he survives, and he feels great afterwards. So now they're going to come back down and help out. But meanwhile, Norman is going to revive the swordsman, and he's going to use the dead body to motivate him against the Skrulls.
Yep, the Skrulls killed your sister. Sorry, dude. I know we were all happy she was back.
Well, can't you just dial up Zola again and his father and say, yeah, can you get another USB of her memories and everything? Get another batch going? That didn't work out so well last time.
But the problem is he doesn't have any more leverage over him. Like, Zola did his bit. It's up on him. Now he needs some other way to, you know, motivate him. But I do like that he's like, Norman's like, oh, well, their shields are up. And he just points his sword in a great kind of, looks like a lot of comics from the 80s type of pose with the sword pointing out, kind of, not really at you, but off to the side, blasting it like He-Man, and he brings it all down. And Norman gives a rousing on-camera speech. Thunderbolts for Earth for freedom. Strike.
But yeah, he's in Washington. They're, because they're in Washington, D.C., they're in a high-profile situation, so they, Norman's really going to try to make the most of this.
Still Plus, never high-profile enough for, at the time, you know, for me to think that, you know, he was going where he was going.
Well, Norman also rigged the system because he had Dr. Chen, the radioactive man, secretly study the phasing power of Atlas Skrull. And so he gives him a verbal command so that he can shoot the guy down on camera. And a Venom Skrull gets to eat his Super Skrull. Whenever we never gave him a name, but the other superpowered Thunderbolt Skrull.
I was trying to figure out which Skrull that was. Like, how come he just looks random? Shouldn't he be another Thunderbolt Skrull?
I think he was, if you remember from the last issue, he was kind of mimicking, I thought, Venom, because he was kind of darker. And then he also had, I assume that's supposed to be the Grim Reaper one.
Yeah, and he has the weird headgear, too.
Yeah, so that's why I was like, oh, he's like a Venom Grim Reaper, although I don't necessarily associate the Grim Reaper with Thunderbolts.
Yeah, that's the weird thing.
But that's where it ends, except with a great superimposition of Norman sitting in front of the Lincoln Memorial, also kind of like, I guess we're supposed to think of him as the...
Great Emancipator.
Yeah. He's freeing us from the Skrulls.
I thought he was taking a little bit of a break there. That the battle got him worked up and he needed to go for a second. So it looks like he's just sitting there, you know?
I'll put that next to the opening splash page of the next issue where they have him recreating the Iwo Jima, you know, statue. But he's stabbing the flag into a Skrull who's got viscous fluid shooting out of his mouth and the exit wound.
Well, that leads us to a very striking cover of the Thunderbolts on the next one. Norman in his green with an even larger rifle and Bullseye and Venom looking menacingly over piles of dead Skrulls.
This stuff must have been popular, like this era, or there was something going on with the ordering. Because 123, I had to buy as a back issue. And 126, I also bought it as a back issue out of town. Isn't that weird? Like, I don't know what was going on. Maybe it was a popular book.
Weird for Canada.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure what to make of that. But, you know, different books have different issues. We start with another classic sort of Iwo Jima moment where Norman's raising the American flag, but he's stabbing a Skrull with it. And he's by himself, as opposed to, you know, with all the people hoisting it together.
Well, it's symbolic of what's happening. This is like the news story. So this is the coverage. This is the way the story's being spun and the news is being told. It's Norman practically doing this single-handedly so he can get the credit.
Yeah, you wouldn't want Nick Fury and his Secret Warriors showing up in New York saving everyone to get the credit.
He gives a big speech on camera to the, you know, news anchorette and then goes off to inside the building where his team is fighting. And it's pretty funny because she gives him a send off, like who knows what horrors he's stepping into and he's really going to be laying it on the line. And he walks in there and the Thunderbolts are just slaughtering Skrulls by the dozens, chopping them in half, biting their heads off, ripping them into two, blasting them with energy. They got this.
You think so?
Well, the Skrulls all initiate some weird cult program where they take suicide pills so they can form some giant blob scroll creature out of the protoplasmic green remains.
Oh boy, the but Thunderbolts like fighting weird blob creatures.
But it doesn't last very long, and Melissa is able to fight it off, but you know, gets a dig into Carla at the meantime. And it was some kind of suicide thing. But after that, Norman on camera, you know, he's going to, I think he's still on camera anyways, because they bothered to show usually that there's a cameraman about every page or so. So I think we're meant to take it all on camera. And he orders Chen to go back to base just in case he has another freak out. And also secretly that serves him because he wants to break up Radioactive Man and Melissa. And Swordsman's like, don't you dare take me off the field. I'm going to be killing as many Skrulls as I can. And Venom just wants brains. Norman's like, shut up and get out of here. You don't want that on camera.
Yeah, and then they head to New York where all the big action is going on.
And, yes, yeah, not this the Savage is, Land.
This is that weird thing where Thor in that series is just like, well, we'll just have a final showdown in Central Park, and everyone will show up, and we'll just fight there. And other weirdness went on, too. But at least you get some good quips here.
This is what I didn't like about the other thing about Secret Invasion, is just the whole idea of the designs of all these different Super Skrulls wearing the costumes and the colors. But the costumes are all like costume amalgamations too. It's just so bogus. Like there's a Cable Skrull and he's like wearing straps of ammo and he even has like the little lit up eye. Like, what do you need that to like, what? It's so, there's some really doofusy designs. I thought they came off looking like clowns for the most part.
I thought that was hilarious. A Cable Skrull? Yeah,
I think that was a bit of a joke because they have the one that's like Nova and Daredevil kind of mixed with like throwing stars and the, I thought it was meant to be a little goofy in a way, I guess. I don't know. The Iron Fist Skrull I like too.
Better than Norman getting a kill shot and becoming the head of everything.
Well, I don't mind it so much when the Skrull looks like it's like was impersonating one hero. Well, this amalgamation thing, it's, I don't know, works for the Super Skrull, but even he doesn't, you know, dress, I mean, I don't know. He doesn't wear a Fantastic Four costume, for crying out loud. It's purple and green like he's supposed to be.
Well, also, the, I would have wished if they were going to go big with one of Hank Pym's versions, instead of Yellow Jacket, they should have went old school with Giant Man.
Hmm. See, that he's a character from another book, that's why. And that was a big moment.
So, how do you feel about the sort of Dakin Cyclops Colossus one?
Oh, man. That's kind of a weird combination.
Andrew, they made a big oversized Marvel Universe action figure of the 3 3/4 inch figures, but they also came like with 1 3 3/4 size figure and then 1 large size figure, and the large size figure was a Skrull that was Giant Man in the red. I thought you'd be pleased with that.
I am. I like all kinds of weird action figs, even though I've cut back on my own purchases for sanity and space reasons. This one is mimicked a little bit by the main series, which, again, is fine. It's always weird, though, when they take so much of the same thing, because they redo the... There's a sequence where Daredevil has a rocket launcher thing, and you see the same thing where he targets what looks like Daredevil and Spider-Man, but then he uses it to blow out the eye of Skrull, Giant, Pym, Wasp, Black, Yellow Jacket, whatever we're calling him.
You know who looks really bad in this issue? Iron Man. He's just like, oh, my armor's failing. I gotta go leave now. And he just runs away, and you're just like, what was that all about?
That's just the break Norman was looking for.
Exactly, but it's so weird here. It's like, yeah, I guess there was a... Like, they introduced the whole Stark Tech thing, but it just seems so bizarre. And they pin everything on, like, one moment.
the Skrulls knew about the Stark tech and they could turn off the Stark tech. So that's why the Osborn tech was working, and Osborn gets to stand out as the hero because his stuff worked and Tony's didn't. And Tony had to leave because his suit wasn't up to snuff because it was Stark tech.
And then the V Battalion came in with their own tech and said, oh yeah, we've been always been prepared for this type of stuff, and saved the day.
Sorry, Dallas Rogerin is a bureaucrat now. She's no longer exactly. with the V Battalion.
Well, the problem is they need the flying V for the Thunderbolts if they really want to make it good. But I do like the big splash of the Thunderbolts coming in with Penance, who I forgot he could fly.
He flies a lot in these issues.
Yeah. That was just one of his power sets that I had.
I thought he used to bounce.
I wasn't, yeah. I was more a speedball than a Penance guy, so I never really had much of a take on that character. But that's the, that's how it ends, with Norman running in, guns a-blazing, and he has the Thunderbolts belt buckle on.
You know what's weird? Speedball, I mean Penance, mentions at one point that he had apprehended Nitro. And I'm like, when did that happen in his own miniseries? We're like, we're supposed to be the Thunderbolts guys. And I'm like, oh no.
You're not supposed to bring up the Penance miniseries.
I actually read the Penance miniseries. I don't remember if we covered it. Did we cover it on this one or not?
We didn't cover it, but it was Paul Gulacy art. That's why I read it.
Oh.
It was fun. I mean,
I don't know if fun would be the word for it.
It sort of minimizes Dr. Doom and greatly exaggerates Robbie's mental strategy and skills and everything. But I guess if you're really a big Penance fan, it's for you.
Hey, those Ditko characters always get the best of Dr. Doom, like Squirrel Girl.
I like the cover on 126 and 127, but there's some ones after this where it's just, I don't know, it's just too much of the gray, the black, and the smoke and all that.
Too fractured for me. Give me something to look at. This is a broken mirror.
Not too matte fraction for you, eh, Steve?
Wah, wah. All right, so now we've got Andy Diggle, who's the new writer. Look at how long he lasts. It's Roberto De La Torre, whose stuff I really like a lot. I really liked his stuff on the Iron Man run, and he did some fill-in stuff on other titles that I dig this guy's stuff. I wish he had stuck around the House of Ideas for longer.
Sorry, Steve, he went to Valiant.
They got a good collection of artists over there.
Yeah, they do. They do.
And it's a nice look of like you say, Steve, he does a great job. And it starts with the swordsman doing a memorial for his sister with Songbird looking on. And he notes he's going to finish off Norman. He's going to kill him.
Again.
And then there's a whole, as Steve hinted, Dallas Reardon is now a government flunky, and Norman's at a big hearing. This is all setting up the Chocolate Rain series, which comes after Secret Invasion. So it's got to have Norman be put in the position. But the best thing is he announces the Thunderbolts are no more. He can't operate with this group of bureaucrats holding him back.
Well, this is his negotiating strategy, right? I mean, the CSA that Reardon is part of, the council of senators or whatever, the Senate subcommittee that oversees Norman, they gave him the authority and set up this whole Thunderbolts team for Civil War and afterwards. So now here's Norman at the height of his PR, right? At the height of that gravitas he was looking for. He wants to spend a little of that cred he's got, and he and his Thunderbolts were just in the limelight, and they got very positive news coverage, and he is pulling them off the table. I can't do it this way with you guys. Sorry. And walks out the door with it. So everyone's going to be, the pressure's going to be on. No, you can't let that happen. And so Norman's going to be able to get the power from the president directly.
Yeah.
And I do love how he gives the Nixon V's.
Oh, jeez.
Like, they're really laying in. He's not going to be a new one. But that gets us sliding over to Robbie with a session with Carla, which is never good.
Mm.
I say yes to Doc Samson sessions. no to Carla Sessions because she's really giving him a hard time. And then she eventually, after razzing him, drugs him and decides to send him up forever. So, you know, that's what you get for betraying her.
Well, you this know, is they... it. Norman and Carla are enacting the, like, the end protocols here now. They're making their move. Norman's going for... It's like this is happening while Norman's in the office with the president, you know, meeting and negotiating for power. Is he's got his flunkies now going to go and start picking apart who we think of as the good guys on the team.
Well, there are no Thunderbolts anymore, Steve. And, like, the title might be called Thunderbolts, but there effectively isn't a team anymore at this point. So I guess we can just go and murder Songbird, I guess.
Well, if there's not a team, then why do they feel so threatened and need to make these moves to be able to get out of it? This is them trying to close the door on the thorns in their side. And,
pretty much.
Like I said, get rid of the good guys so they can enact their dark reign agenda. This is the Dark Avengers are coming here, and some of these characters are going to be in that book, and it ain't going to be Songbird and Robbie.
No, of course not. They're going to take the popular Thunderbolts, rebrand them Dark Avengers, and somehow you still have a Thunderbolts book. But we'll get to that eventually. We'll have some moments between Radioactive Man and Songbird before then. Whereas he tries to get him to leave rather quickly. They touch upon that one of those earlier scenes where it seemed like there might have been something between Melissa and... Radioactive Man.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're doing the initiating their protocols here. It's like they've had these ways of getting rid of these people kind of in their back pockets, and now it's time to, you know, it's the green light.
Yeah, so if you remember, Melissa did that terrible thing to Bullseye like many issues ago, so Bullseye is going to come and kill her. You know what I thought about when I saw this scene? I was like, oh, this reminds me of... it doesn't go as badly as that scene, as that whole Tagra, the Hood scene.
Oh, yeah.
So when
brutal.
I saw this, I started thinking of that, but it doesn't turn out
No,
that
this
way.
Is more suspense
yeah.
type stuff. I like the scene first when they have the moment with her and Chen kind of having their goodbye because Chen is... going to be sent off, the Radioactive Man. She pulls out a picture of the original Thunderbolts team, and you get to see the old classic Thunderbolts there. And the thing that I was thinking of is when I saw the picture is, thanks to De La Torre, now we know what some of those characters' feet look like. And I noticed that he didn't have draw feet for the girls because there was probably no reference at all for like what their feet looked like from those old books.
But Steve, you gotta tell me, what's with that Moonstone costume? Like, did she phase for the photo? Like, he didn't draw all the weird.
It's like she's got Starfire's costume
yes.
from the Teen Titans.
It's true.
The old reference, Steve, is hooves. That's what they used to. That was what their feet used to look like.
Yeah, just used to end at the ankle.
But yeah, so Bullseye has Melissa at his blade point.
A knife in the jugular and a knife in her spine. And the knife in her spine is actually a little bit inserted, so she can't scream to use her power.
Yeah, so he's going to make it hard on her. And that slams us into 127, which is, he's like, say, kill me. And she says something else instead.
How about kiss my with an awesome splash page where Bullseye is thrown back.
Can we say that on Marvel Noise?
Oh, yeah. Can we, Steve?
I don't know.
It said it in this comic.
We did.
And so Bullseye is excited to fight, but he throws his Psi to short out her sonic harness.
Because,
you know, he wants to make it last long. And
why do
throws...
they always put the on-off button right in the center in the front?
I was going to say that. I'm like, what? Like, I get, yeah, Bullseye can hit any point, but I'm just like, oh, like... What if that happened in another battle or something? There's just that thing right there, and you're like, oh. Ugh, doesn't seem like good design.
No, but it does work to knock her down, which I think was the whole point of this, was to, you know, take her down a peg. Because this is going to be one of those, Well, like you talked about Aliens and Alien. This is a similar one where it's like Chase Melissa loses powers and loses what she has to have, and then she's got to take on Norman and the whole team. Well, not Norman, but you know, the whole bad Thunderbolts.
Yeah, so like losing the harness means she can't fly, so now she loses that advantage. So now he can come after her on the ground, and she's certainly at a disadvantage.
And he goes to throw his other side to finish her off, and she blocks it with her hand, except it doesn't really block.
Eventually it does. That's the good thing about the design of the Psi, though. Eventually the hand will block it.
So that's got to hurt. I don't care who you are. But she managed to duck into the convenient duck system that exists in movies and TV and comics only, and uses the Psi to short the lock shot.
Well, it is a weird base.
Yeah, it's Thunderbolt's Mountain.
Like, Ogre was hanging out in those tunnels for, like, months and months.
That would have been so cool if she, like, ran to, like, one of Ogre's, like, safe rooms where he had a bunch of stuff stashed away. And remember how he had, like, different weird things? Like, she pulls out one of, like, the flying, sky bikes or something. Oh, yeah. That would have been cool.
But I think that most of that stuff was stashed, like, way below.
So they decide to stick Venom on her.
Now she's got Venom and Bullseye after her?
Through the service, and she's calling in a code black. And Carla answers, of course, and says, "Oh, we have Bullseye back under control. I activated his nano chain. He's no problem. You should come back to the med bay." And she's like, "Okay." And turn off, and then it turns out Bullseye asks her what's going on, and Carla's like, "Yeah, I just lied to her, obviously." I mean, she doesn't say that, but she mentions that Songbird killed her transmitter, so she can't track her.
I like this whole nano chain thing comes up again, and it's just like, oh no, those haven't worked in a while.
Those haven't worked since you got zapped.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then Bullseye's just furious, like, what? I could have been killing people all this time.
I could have been killing.
Like, he hasn't been? Jeez. Well, Moonstone does a great maneuver, though. Moonstone heads back to meet them at the bay, but she jumps in the Zeus first and fires missiles at them.
That's pretty great.
Carla has that intangibility thing.
Yes, and Bullseye just zips out, but she says something to Bullseye, like noting that she's going to try and bribe him, but we don't hear what the bribe is.
It's like what Mary Jane whispered to Mephisto, or what...
Or what was in that box to convince the readers that Mary Jane was actually dead?
Or what Nick Fury whispered to Thor?
Oh, I think that's coming up soon. We're going to find out.
Oh,
so as she rockets away, Venom jumps into the thing, and Bullseye grabs a hold. So again, it's... I thought they could have given Melissa a little more agency, as the kids call it. She seems a little passive in a way, and more afraid all the time. Like, she's pretty badass, but the crash knocks out Venom. However, Bullseye's still there. And he's going to do her in until she gets saved by the swordsman.
Nice. See, Strucker's got a little honor.
Well, he doesn't.
Well, He only wants to keep her around because Norman wants her dead.
Exactly. No, he doesn't like come Norman. On.
Dude, everybody loves Melissa.
What I'm really surprised is that Swordsman didn't just fry Bullseye, but I guess he doesn't know. If he knew what Bullseye did to his sister, that would have had a different ending.
Bullseye is steaming like a,
That's right. You can see the smoke.
A bun in the oven.
The char.
Like, say, like a dog job on a cold day.
And you know what I mean? He doesn't love her, like, affectionate lover in that way. But, I mean, like, whether you agree or not agree with Melissa, she's so strong-willed and a good person who believes in her thing that, like, yeah, maybe not necessarily a good person, but you know what I mean? She's someone you can count on once you've got her on your side type of thing, that there's a camaraderie there that you don't let somebody like that get offed.
She was the team leader, and he does her the further favor of completely vaporizing the vehicle so that he's like, look, Now you died in the crash, so you're free to go.
Oh, you can go get weird now.
And
she's not going to be in the book anymore?
He drops in a dark rain is coming, which I could have done without. But other than that, that's where it ends. I mean, that's literally the next issue is a dark rain tie-in. But this is where we end it at one. At this one, which was, like I said, kind of a fun. We're going to do the, you know, we've seen this done from Kitty Pryde to all the other characters. They get trapped and have to fight their way out.
But they made a joke two issues ago with the new creative team that they're coming to burn down the house. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I referred to this arc as.
I thought it was communiques.
Like, I was going to say, yeah, they're burning down the title right now, pretty much.
Yeah, half the team just tried to kill the other half.
Yeah, but there's still plenty. What about all the classic Thunderbolts, like Smuggler? And
Smuggler.
Smuggler. Is that a Jostin?
Remember when Dr. Octopus was part of the team?
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, there's still some classic Thunderbolts left, but it was fun. You know, I don't... Especially being sort of hamstrung by being a tie-in to the event. And now they had a prominent role in the event.
Well, that's the thing.
It can't be easy to be like, okay, you have to make this fight part of your comic. You have to do this. You have to do that. Those are hard strictures.
Another thing is, like, the Thunderbolts are getting relaunched. So, like, the Norman stuff was so popular, the Thunderbolts is getting relaunched as another book.
And the Dark Rain thing lasts a long time.
Probably not as long as you think.
Well, it lasts a long time on the covers of the comics. I'll give you that much. Like I said, I enjoyed it. Steve, okay, what did you think of this six-issue interstitial?
Yeah, it was like two action, you know, episodes, really. Two action arcs that were really, like we said, there was only a one-second difference between the cuts between issues in each of the two stories. So things moved along at quite a clip and a lot of stuff happened. But like you said, it was all to end yet another era of the Thunderbolts.
Yeah. It's a decent enough stuff. I wouldn't say it's great stuff, but it's not terrible stuff either. I think I have a bone to pick with 2008, Kevin. I think he rated too high.
Oh.
He has like a 4 out of 5 for 122, a 3 out of 5 for 123, and then he has a 4 out of 5, a 4 out of 5. Then, of course, 126 he has no rating because he had to buy it as a back issue. So I thought that was funny. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. And then 127, he has he could have went back, though, and rated that issue, but I guess it was so long between... Like, cause he rated 123, but I guess it was so long a wait between the actual issue and he got that issue, so you know he didn't go back. And 127, he gave out a 4 out of 5. Like, I don't have a problem with some of those ratings, but the Secret Invasion stuff, I'm like, I don't think he should be giving Ellis the same rating as he's giving the Secret Invasion stuff. But that's probably because he couldn't separate between 3 and 4, right? He couldn't give it a 3.5. He probably should have gave it all a 3, the Secret Invasion.
Kevin, the he is you from just like 8 years ago. I like how you continue to maintain the now Kevin versus Kevin from the past.
Well, who knows? You might have him locked up in a closet somewhere.
I'm really a Skrull, guys. This isn't really me.
Who can you trust?
Well, I guess until... Kevin gets his Doctor Doom time platform back. We'll have to keep reading them Thunderbolts, keep watching the skies, and next time it'll be Power Man. Woo!
He loves you.
I'm going to be Blackbeard.